Hey there, this is Sarah, the host of Trending Globally.
And this is Dan, Trending Globally's producer.
And we just wanted to say, if you like what you hear, you can get more conversations just like this by subscribing to Trending Globally on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And if you've already subscribed, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps others find us.
All right, enjoy the show. From the Watson Institute at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Sarah Baldwin. Over the past few months, we've talked with public officials, health experts, physicians, and students to try to make sense of this pandemic for our listeners. On this episode, we're looking at this moment from a new point of view, that of a city mayor. Sumbul Siddiqui is the mayor of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Her family moved to Cambridge from Karachi, Pakistan when she was 2 years old. She became a student activist and studied public policy at Brown before getting a law degree at Northwestern. After that, she moved back to Cambridge, got involved in local politics, joined the city council, and was elected mayor just this past January. Since then, of course, American cities have become hotspots in a global pandemic and have transformed in ways no one could have expected. But they've become the center of something else, too. A bold reimagining of how to address inequality, health, and injustice in America. Things that Mayor Siddiqui has been working for since long before the pandemic struck. To talk with Mayor Siddiqui, we had a special guest host, Watson Visiting Professor and Faculty Fellow Jerie Augusto. Jerie is a former activist who now teaches international affairs, public policy, and their intersection with social justice. She was also one of Mayor Siddiqui's professors back at Brown. Here's Jerie.
Good morning, Mayor Siddiqui, and thank you so much for giving us this time in a time when public officials and public servants don't really have a lot of time, so we really appreciate it. So I'd like to start with place and space. Cambridge is nationally and globally recognized as the home of two of the world's leading educational institutions. It's also permanent home to a highly diverse population, which not a lot of people necessarily know. It's diverse not just by race and ethnicity, but by economic levels. Would you give us a profile, Mayor, on Cambridge as home to its citizens and a portrait of the kinds of minds and hands, and for me, every person has both minds and hands going at the same time, that make the city run? What is Cambridge? Who is Cambridge and who makes it run?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to talk to you. And as far as what, you know, Cambridge is, you know, it's been my hometown and I've seen it change in so many different ways. We have people living here who are our essential workers, right? They are those who are working at grocery stores, including my own mom. They are those who are on the front lines daily. You know, there's a highly diverse population, but we also, with that comes with, you know, a real sense of income inequality, right? That we don't like to talk about too much, but yes, we're home to MIT and Harvard and Lesley, but we have many families, over 3,000 families who are living in poverty. And we have so many households with children, you know, led by single mothers who are in extreme poverty. And then, you know, you position that to the many millionaires who live here too. So it's a very interesting tale of two cities, a city, and there's a lot of high need. And it's become clear to me just during this pandemic, as we've, you know, initiated the mayor's relief fund for COVID-19, and we've almost raised $4 million. And we've seen that, you know, we've had so many applications and there's such need in this community. And but then there's also a huge, you know, response from folks who want to contribute and donate. So it's a city that has its challenges and, you know, we're not perfect by any means, but we're trying to help as many people as possible. And that's what the Cambridge stands out to me, that, you know, we do care about our neighbors and we want to help as much as possible.
What's changed about your job from being a city council member, which is busy enough and important enough, to being the mayor? What's the kind of the hardest political choice you've had to make so far in your new office, not as city council member alone, but now as the mayor?
Yeah, certainly. I think it has changed a lot right now. As mayor, I work very closely with the city manager to make a lot of the critical decisions for the city. I use my new role as mayor to really uplift the voices and communities that, you know, often don't have a seat at the table. I think as, you know, a city councilor, I had a platform, but as mayor, you just have a much bigger platform to do the work that you care about. I mean, of course, this pandemic has shifted what is expected of the mayor. I chair the school committee, I chair the city council. I'm still doing that. But I think my role is even more important now as people look for guidance and reassurance and resources. And so that's like, I think, the biggest part of it. And it is truly the city hall. Our city buildings are closed to the public, but I am certainly in city hall almost every day in my office. My team is all remote. And I think the hardest political choice, you know, there's been a few so far related to COVID. And I think one has been, it's been very difficult to balance things that could improve mental health, you know, such as going outside and creating more space for people and also balancing that with these public health advisories, right? We're telling people to stay home, but then there's people who do want to get outside and have said, you know, why can't you close down the streets for more recreation? All the other cities are doing this, you know. We have a huge area called Memorial Drive that closes on Sundays starting in April. And the city manager decided, you know, I think the best course there would be not to open it up to pedestrians for the time being, even though myself and a few of my colleagues disagreed. So that's been the challenging part, you know, this notion of balancing mental health with public health advisories. And I think we're learning as we go. And I think I've made it clear to the city manager and others, you know, including our health department, you know, that as we move forward and reopen, we have to think about how we use space and reimagine space. I think people are going to need way more space to get out and properly social distance. But it is important to take some time and be outside. So that's, I think, those are those choices. I think right now we're really hearing it from the residents who are very upset that we have not made any movement on closing streets for more pedestrian-friendly, you know, ways for people to get out. So I think that's been a challenge.
It's interesting that you talk about the challenge that you're facing in terms of balancing, because a lot of times just from what we see on television or read in blogs and on social media is not balanced. It's people on one extreme and people on the other extreme. And so thinking of the public official, the public leader as a balancer, as a person who helps people think about and finding the balance is interesting. And, you know, kind of a new twist for those of us who teach public policy and public administration. I don't know if we stress enough about that need for balance. And then the other word that you mentioned that really strikes me is reimagining space and equipment and services. And I'm just wondering if you could walk us through maybe the part of a day with respect to COVID-19. Who do you listen to? Who do you talk with? So on a typical day, with respect to this trying to find balance, trying to reimagine, who do you listen to? How does a morning go when you're listening and talking?
Yeah, sure. So this morning I was on a call with the Metro Mayors Coalition that we have in Massachusetts. This is made up of over 20 mayors and city managers, and we are on these calls every few days. And today the call was with the lieutenant governor, and, you know, we're supposed to reopen on May 18th. And so there's a lot of questions around that. And so these are, you know, these are kind of the conversations we're having of what are we thinking about reopening and, you know, what is the phased approach going to be? What metrics are you looking at? So, you know, that was one phone call. And then the day can look like talking to our public health department, our public health experts. I'm in constant communication with the city manager and his team. And then obviously our residents and hearing from residents and what they're experiencing. And so that's who I'm listening to and who I'm talking to on a day-to-day. I think as the mayor's office, we get calls on everything. And so we have a way of, you know, triaging those calls. And so a lot of the day is kind of caught up in those types of things. But I can tell you that no day is the same. So that's I'm never bored. It's always something happening and some issue that's critical that's come up and you have to put your attention to it. And during the COVID night, this crisis, just so much has happened. And the one thing I've learned is we've been able to do things as a city that I think would have in the past, we've often said, oh, we'll get to it, or that's impossible. We've been able to do things very quickly. And that's been exciting to see how, because we're in an emergency, we're all hands on deck and we're going to make things happen really quickly. And so that's been pretty exciting.
Tell me a little bit more about a couple of the initiatives that we've been aware of. One is the Mayor's Disaster Relief Fund. I'd just like to know, how did the idea arise? And then the other one is about, we understand that you now will be having in Cambridge testing open to anyone over 8 years. Tell me a little bit more about how those arose and how they came together as steps, innovative steps, or at least bold steps that Cambridge would be taking.
So the Mayor's Disaster Relief Fund, it was reactivated because of the COVID-19. And in the past, there's been fires, right, that community members have been involved with that's why the purpose of the fund was there. Quickly, in the first few days of this crisis, you know, we knew that we would have to reactivate the fund to support our, you know, families and individuals and many others facing hardship. And so that fund got started. And, you know, as I mentioned, it's now almost $4 million. And the fundraising has been, you know, we've gotten some large financial contributions from some of our, you know, key partners who are in Cambridge. By, you know, Takeda Pharmaceutical donated $2 million. Biogen donated $1 million. We have we're very fortunate as a city. And so that's, I think, with the caveat of so many cities, I think, would love to do something like this, but don't have that capacity and don't have those partners. And so we've been able to get that going. And, you know, we've had, we've offered a phone line in Amharic, Arabic, Bangla, Chinese, Haitian Creole, Portuguese, and Spanish for folks to call. And, you know, we have a team of about 50 people working on applications and getting people help. And so that's been, it's amazing to see how we've been able to get money out so quickly as well. And so that's been an important initiative to me. And the testing program really came through a partnership through the Broad Institute, through affiliated with Harvard MIT and in partnership with our Cambridge Public Health Department to support first our long-term care facilities, because as we know nationally from the data, this is where the number of deaths, particularly in Massachusetts and in Cambridge, where our deaths are coming from. And so we were able to partner with this institute to provide testing to these long-term care facilities. And then our next step was our homeless population. And so testing our homeless population, because we also know that that population is very vulnerable as well. So we wanted to get testing going. And now we've been able to work with these partners and we've used city money to, you know, buy these tests. And MIT has also helped us pay for some of these tests as we expand. And then we pushed to get it in another neighborhood. And that looks a little differently from the other testing site, but it's more mobile. And it's in an area of Cambridge that's called the Port, which is predominantly, you know, it's a lot of low-income families, a large Black community. And we really felt that, you know, we have to make sure that there's access to testing and that people, who are the essential workers, right, can get these tests. Because right now, you know, the fear for me was, okay, we opened up this test site and we're going to have the people who have been home since the pandemic getting a test. And that's not, you know, I think we want to test our most vulnerable. And so we've come up with some strategies on how to expand the testing through the neighborhoods that have been impacted the most. So it's exciting that we get to be able to do this. Again, I think it goes back to Cambridge being a city that is well-resourced. But I often think about all the other cities that aren't, and many cities I've worked in, and they're doing so much too with such limited resources. So it is one of those things where I'm fortunate that we have the resources to solve the problems here.
You mentioned data, the things that you are consulting to help you think about making the balance. We hear a great deal about models, projections, big data with respect to COVID-19, and the stakes are pretty high for policymakers because depending on how you read and absorb the data and how you interpret it, then how you think about deploying it, you can be either achieving greater balance and equality or, you know, pushing inequality. So I'm wondering, what challenges do you face when you're looking at data, predictive models, projections, and that kind of thing? And how do you think about balancing that with that kind of voice within you, the person who was born and grew up in Cambridge anyway, and you're thinking about, you know, that balance between the use of data and the political decisions, the social decisions that you have to make?
I think with this crisis, it's been very key to look at the data and use the get data to guide our decision making. You know, it has been interesting that maybe March 12th, when this was going on, we had, you know, no guide. The guidance was don't wear a mask outside. It's mid-May. And 2 weeks ago, we put out a advisory of saying you have to wear a mask outside. What has been interesting is that I've had to say, look, there's a lot of things we don't know. And it's really challenging. And things are going to change. One thing that was true one day is not going to be true, the other day. And so because it's changing so much, sometimes it's like, oh my God, what do I believe in? What is the right answer? And I think I've come to just realize that you have to really be open to it. And even with the city manager, he and I had conversations with some key health department people in the beginning who were like, you know, masks, there's no evidence, right, that they're going to protect you and all these things. And then as studies came out and as studies continue to come out, we're seeing how, having a mask on, a face covering on can, help with slowing the spread. And so it's the data has evolved, but I think the data in these cases, we've been able to point to it and say, look, it's guiding our decision making and our decisions. And for the most part, the residents have really been, they've complied with everything that we're doing because we've been able to back it up with data, you know, with everything decision we made, closing the schools, with shutting down businesses, with shutting down, with everything we did in the beginning of the crisis, it was backed by this idea of social distancing and social distancing being key. And people were like, they couldn't see it, right? Because the results of social distancing take a while, but it all came back to making sure that folks understood that, look, we don't want to overburden the hospital system, right? We want to make sure there's enough beds for the people who need the beds. And really breaking it down in simple terms and saying, look, we want to make sure there's capacity. And if you're outside and you're mingling with people and you're partying, you're going to overload our hospital system. And so we've been able to share with the public, you know, weekly, our stats around the hospitals and you know, the bed capacity and how many patients are still in the hospital with COVID, how many patients have recovered. So it has been all that to say, data is a huge part of the political decisions that we're making. And sometimes that data has changed from point A to point B. So that's been the challenge with using data to predict things because it's changing so often. But it's also, I think right now, as policymakers, we can't ignore the science. And we cannot ignore some of these key indicators.
one of the hardest things for a public official to manage in societies like ours, which are diverse and also unequal, is dealing with difference. And it can easily get translated into hierarchies and rankings of who gets what, who gets surveilled, who gets tested, who gets treated. And it's also become increasingly evident how race, ethnicity, and being an essential worker, a frontline worker, all interact in this country, in the whole country, not just in Cambridge, but everywhere. So you started with giving us an understanding of how diverse Cambridge is. I'm wondering, in your thinking about the reopening, we're all anxious for the reopening, how has Cambridge's diversity in terms of the essential workers, and, you know, frankly, they have color, they have gender, they have, you know, ethnicity, how does that come into your thinking about the reopening?
Yeah, I think right now what a hot topic is, the state has its own reopening advisory board, and the criticism that's come up for that board is that there's really no one who works in an essential business such as a grocery store, others represented. And, you know, there's a lot of big business and construction type folks on the advisory board. And I think when we think about Cambridge, I've talked to the city manager about this. I think, you know, the state will come out with some guidelines, but really the city has power to make its own decisions. We can go above what maybe the governor mandates, you know, which we've done a few times. And I think when we think about reopening, you know, there's these three categories, right? There's the essential workers, there's those who are unemployed because of COVID-19, and those that can work remotely and maintain their salary. And I've kept all of these in mind. I think we as a city right now have decided we are probably going to slowly think about reopening city government in June, but it's going to really look like we actually did a survey of employees just recently. You know, childcare is going to be an issue, right? So all these things we have to take into account as we think about these different populations and their different needs. But we cannot ignore the fact that, you know, if you're already health-wise vulnerable, you shouldn't be coming into work. You should be working from home, and we should be paying you for that. There's going to be some tough decisions because some cities literally can't do that. Cambridge is fortunate. We have not. We've been able to pay everyone throughout this, and we hope to continue. But down the line, you know, there's going to be some hard considerations to make.
Let me pivot for a bit as we're coming to the close. Slightly happier vision of what your work has been and what your time as mayor has been. We're all very, very proud of you at the Watson Institute. And that's something that the students have had who've met you have had the opportunity to share. I was wondering if you had a message for Brown's graduating class of 2020, and indeed for young people who are graduating in this most extraordinary and challenging year. Is it a decade ago that this was you? Is it almost a decade? It's hard to remember.
Next week was going to be the 10 year.
10 years. Okay. You know how that dates me. I remember having you in the old Taubman Center building 10 years ago. But if you have that message for Brown's graduating class, or, you know, all of them, and young people even further away, because other people in Cambridge in your city may be listening who are also graduating from wherever they're graduating from, do you have a message?
Yeah, you know, I think I'd just say that, you know, you'll get through this time. It's very challenging. You have to just remember, you know, that you have to lead with information, with integrity, with grace. It's definitely going to be probably the hardest year you've probably experienced in recent history, and this is the hardest year for many and what they've experienced. But I think it just means that we're all being challenged, but we're all growing in new ways as a result. So it might be hard to know it right now and to see, you know, what the key learnings from this time period will be. But it's a trial that you'll get, we'll all get through, but it's going to take a lot of time and effort.
Information, integrity, and grace. Now there's a triad for people to think, to have and to cherish going forward. The final question is a bit more personal. What are you doing to take care of yourself and your staff? I know you think about your staff a lot, but you and your staff. And then what's your dream for how you will spend that first clear, fully reopened weekend, not with restrictions, that one further down, that first fully reopened one? What are you going to do?
Yeah, so I think with, we have a weekly team meeting call, you know, where I just check in with the team. And, you know, we talk about books we're reading or the puzzles that we're, you know, people are making or the shows that people are watching. And we just take the time to laugh and be with each other. And I think not seeing each other is hard. So it's really important for me to take that time to let loose with them and, you know, not talk about the work that we're doing or the deadlines or anything that would make us kind of stressed. And so, you know, because we're so apart. And so really that's kind of what I've been doing, or sending group texts and joking as much as possible. And also saying, look, hey, you know, if you need something, you know, if you need to take a day, take some time off, you're welcome to do that. Because it's a trying time. And I think on the first clear, like reopen day, I think, you know, I miss my mom and dad a lot. You know, they're literally a mile and a half away, maybe 2 miles, but I haven't been able to really see them. So I'd love to like pick them up and take them out to just spend some quality time with them. And it was just nice to be doing something normal with them. And they've, you know, my mom's an essential worker, so she's been working. And so, you know, my dad's also been working. And so they're in their late 60s. And so there's been a lot of stress for me around that, because I just wish they'd stay home. But again, that is a luxury. And so for many, and they've not been able to do that. So I think I just have a great weekend with them and eat and spend time with them.
Well, we wish you that great weekend. I can see it in the future, maybe not right away, but in the distant future. And in the meantime, information, integrity, and grace, which is what you have in abundance. And I want to thank you for spending this time with the Watson and sharing with us the real kinds of decisions and quandaries and challenges of leadership as mayor of Cambridge. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Dan Richards and Jackson Cantrell. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. I'm Sarah Baldwin. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps others find the show. We'll be bringing you more episodes soon on the coronavirus pandemic as it unfolds from our community of experts at Watson and Brown. For more information about Trending Globally and Watson's other podcasts, go to watson.brown.edu. Thanks for listening, and tune in soon for another episode of Trending Globally.